we're back on the All Elite Review Show. Kevin Laramie joined by Jason Hackholm. We had a couple of weeks off, Jason, but we're back to talk about AEW Dynamite.
Yeah, I mean, the things that happen in life, they do affect having to do this review sometimes. You were out in Nova Scotia. I had a basketball game to call last Wednesday. Only a few more Wednesday games as university basketball is about to hit their Christmas break this upcoming weekend. So we'll be good up until about the start of the new year, but I'll let you know about that. But yeah, a couple weeks off, but we're fresh and ready to go for the Thanksgiving Eve edition here of AEW Dynamite.
Exactly. And the new tradition for AEW always should be around Thanksgiving at the Sears Center in Chicago. And it's a new tradition. Of course, that's where All In was there. That changed everything last year. And All Out also was at the same venue. And there's a couple of interesting events that happened at that venue, Jason. And I know you love mixed martial arts. I love mixed martial arts also. And especially the history and the late 2000s. Did you know that Strikeforce Fedor versus Rogers actually happened at that place? But also Fedor versus Dan Henderson. Hendo knocked out Fedor pretty badly. That was at the Sears Center too.
Well, I definitely knew about Fedor Brett Rogers because I remember that, and that was one of the around the time TNA ran the Sears Center for Bound for Glory, and I remember the build up for the Fedor Brett Rogers fight where Brett Rogers was, you know, treated really strongly because he was supposed to be one of the next big heavyweights for not just Strikeforce, but MMA as a whole in the stagnant heavyweight division at that time in the UFC. Actually, the UFC heavyweight division was pretty solid, but he was going to be with the one face because he was supposed to fight Kimbo Slice. Obviously, Kimbo didn't work out in the UFC after Elite XC happened, but I remember in that Brett Rogers Fedor fight, like Brett Rogers was tagging Fedor around, and we thought, is Fedor going to lose to Brett Rogers, a guy that used to work at Sam's Town flipping tires, and then Fedor ended him? But no, I totally forgot that Hendo took on Fedor there. That was another big deal for Strikeforce.
Yep, TNA also, Bound for Glory in 2008, October 12th, happened in the Sears Center. And the first Impact Wrestling outside of Florida happened also at the Sears Center on March 14th, 2013. You also have a few interesting aspect, All In, like I mentioned last September, All Out. The Windy City Bulls of the NBA, J-League, are playing at this arena. And this team also, and the MASL, for me, I'm a soccer guy, you guys should know this by now, the Chicago Mustangs play in this venue. I like venues, arenas, stadium is a little something that is, for me, is how I know my geography in the world. And next time I go to Chicago, I'm definitely checking out this Sears Center Arena. Maybe I'll be disappointed, but hey, it's an arena, and I love my arenas.
I know it is outside of Chicago, but I mean, it's held some pretty big events in the history of combat sports. As you mentioned, those two Strikeforce events and the TNA Bound for Glory in 2008 with Sting and Samoa Joe. For the TNA title, and then all these recent AEW shows. So, you know, the Sears Center is really growing in terms of popularity in the Chicago area and in terms of events to run for major promotions, because it is just outside of main city, downtown Chicago, but a very quality sized arena. And I'm sure rent is pretty affordable for a lot of promotions.
And it's not the Rosemont Horizon Arena, which I want to see one day too, of course. But I'll take my Sears Center. Let's talk about AEW Dynamite, November 27th, 2019. A show main evented by Chris Jericho, Le Champion, defending against, and now I have, of course, a drawing blank, against, Jesus Christ,
Scorpio Sky.
Thank you, Scorpio Sky. You know, I should type my notes from now on. That's what I'll do. But this show started with Soul Train Jones. And I'm like, okay, tuning in, putting it on TSN2 here in Canada. And I see Soul Train Jones. I'm like, yes, this will be a good night. This will be fun. Soul Train Jones getting us ready for the greatest night in TV history, Jason.
Yeah, Soul Train Jones obviously continuing his hot little run there with AEW. But before I get into that, you do know that the Rosemont Horizon is the Allstate Center in Chicago.
Yes, and it's so, not in Chicago.
It's yes, like not so, even in Illinois. So that venue was just run a lot by WWE this past weekend with SmackDown, NXT, and Survivor Series and Raw. But yeah, back to AEW, is that's what this show is about. Yeah, Soul Train Jones came out and got a thunderous ovation, and I thought gave a little, you know, reading the cue cards there was perfect. Said it was the greatest night in the history of professional wrestling, and then Jericho came out to a thunderous ovation, even more so. And then as soon as he got in the ring, the crowd started chanting "Thank you." So I was like, this is going to be a fun night of TV. And this is, it's rare that AEW starts out with like the segment type thing. They build into that. Normally we get a couple hot matches before, but I thought this was the perfect way to start the show.
Thanksgiving tradition. They want to start in a Thanksgiving celebration for Le Champion. Chris Jericho, I thought it was hilarious. A few good spots here in this great 20-minute opener. And it was way more entertaining than just a regular promo. So I really enjoyed this opener. Of course, he comes out, told Chicago, okay, sit down, shut up. And you can look under your seat now. It's Thanksgiving and we feel grateful. Look under your seat. You might find a 50-cent coupon for a little bit of the bubbly. Jason, they actually made a real bubbly that they're selling now. That's crazy. They crashed their website. Check the website. The website was crashed. You can see what the website looks like now on your TV screen. A little bit of the bubbly. .com. You get $46. You get two bottles. That's actually not too bad of a price.
Yeah, I was not really shocked, but I guess more surprised at how they went out and made their own champagne that they are selling. And I thought, you know, New Year's is around the corner, and what a pretty cool little marketing campaign. Obviously, you have to be of drinking age to purchase this, but I thought that was pretty cool. Crashed the website, as you said. And apparently it's made from the finest grapes up in Nepal. So this has to be the best champagne available that we've ever had. Forget Dom Perignon. This is the best little bit of the bubbly you can get anywhere, as Chris Jericho and All Elite Wrestling have endorsed this. So, yeah, I was shocked about it. And they kept promoting it throughout with that lower third graphic. So no wonder the website crashed.
I didn't even know that grapes grew in Nepal.
They don't, especially in the mountains.
They don't, okay, if you do. And if you call it champagne, guess what? It has to come from one place, and that's the place called Champagne, France. But yes, that's hilarious. And it was a great, great coup. I laughed out loud. I literally did.
I think it'll be even more appropriate next week when AEW's in Champaign, Illinois. Where a lot of the bubbly references next week.
Come on, that has to be on purpose. Like, okay, there's a town called Champagne. Book it next week. We're going there. Come on. Who writes this stuff? This is awesome. And then continue. And some gifts given to Chris Jericho. I thought that was funny. Sammy Guevara given a cardboard cutout life size of him hugging Chris Jericho. That was nice. I like the little gift of LAX, proud and powerful, the gift they gave to Chris Jericho. Yeah, it was funny, the flip-flops and a couple of jokes with the Vicks Vapor Rub. You put this anywhere and you get you going through the night, if you know what I mean. But what was funny is, you know what this is? Yeah, it's a little bit of the 40. They're milking it for everything, and that's going to be on a t-shirt next week. You have to put money on it.
Well, that, and I thought, once again, Pride and Powerful were excellent in their mic time, getting themselves over in a way that they really didn't get the chance to do that in Impact. They were basically just a solid tag team, solid work rate. Had Conan do a lot of the talking for them, but they're getting to show off their personality and add a little bit of fun to them as well. That we know they can be a violent, hard-hitting, smash-mouth tag team, but right now they're looking like they're having a lot of fun with AEW. So I think that's a difference. I thought they were the highlight of it all, but you know, the one thing I really hope that becomes available on shopaw.com soon is that cardboard cutout, because those used to be the thing back in the day with your favorite stars. And I really hope that is at some point available as well.
We're not the same age, so I don't know how it was for you. But when I was a kid, if I wanted one of these, you had to go to the video store, right? So you're at your video at your Blockbuster or your local video store back in the day, and which they rented wrestling stuff too. And once every couple of months or years, they had the promotional displays, which came out, and there was wrestling ones from time to time. And you had cardboard cutout like this, and you had to tell the guy, the clerk, yeah, I wanted, like, is there anybody else that wanted? Let me check the list. So everyone had a list, or in the back of them, there wasn't your name and then phone number. So if you were the first one, if you called dibs on it, maybe you got lucky and you got yourself a cardboard cutout of Steve Austin with maybe a couple of posters of WWF Unforgiven or something. That was my childhood.
I just remember you could use like the old mail order type thing on like either certain wrestling sites or vendors had stuff, or for the WWF shop, you could buy them through the magazine. So I remember that, where you filling it out. But I mean, obviously I never had the joyousness of owning a stand up Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels or The Undertaker or Stone Cold Steve Austin or The Rock. But, you know, there is eBay, and I have almost been tempted to purchase one of those. But sanity had prevailed.
Yeah, I've seen your t-shirt collection from time to time when you posted on social media, and you have quite a nice collection, so I can only imagine all the things you would have loved to have. But unfortunately, eBay is real money, and sometimes it's not that easy. One thing that I thought was kind of cool too, Justin Roberts, they made it come in, read the paper, but they highlight the fact that he's a hometown kid. He lives not too far from them. Went to Buffalo Grove High School, not too far from him, which apparently, according to Chris Jericho, it sucks, which you should have seen that coming. But I thought it was great, because then, of course, they start to beat down on Justin Roberts, and Excalibur on commentary. He's like, they beat him up in his own town. Who does that? Who does that? Ah, a couple of good lines for Excalibur tonight.
I thought we haven't talked about the highlight of that segment, which was where they had the big box.
Yeah.
And the big box in wrestling, for those who don't know, is usually someone Chris Jericho's either going to be feuding with or having a match. So Scorpio Sky tonight is who I thought was going to be under there. In MLW, I saw this where Serena Del Rey, or whatever I believe her name is in MLW, had a present. It was her big party. Serena De Laurentiis, excuse me, and it was Mansoor who came through there, or the famous one is Sting had a present, and it was from Cactus Jack, and it was Abdullah the Butcher that came out. But they unveiled it, and it was Chris Jericho's legit father, Ted Irvine, in his New York Rangers jersey. You know, they let Ted have some fun as well, where he got on the mic and the first thing he said was, "It's great to be back in New York City." And Chris was like, "Oh, we're in Chicago."
He's like, "Oh, man, this place sucks." Oh, I thought that was so funny. Oh, I don't know about you. Is it the first time we actually see Ted Irvine in Chris Jericho's career? I think it is. Like, he never used that.
In the ring for something like this, yes, because he's been in like documentary pieces about Chris, or on social media when Jericho worked New Japan last year. There was a pretty cool picture of Chris, his dad, and Don Callis, who now runs Impact Wrestling, there, because Don was doing the color commentary for the English feed on New Japan. But yeah, that's really the first time ever in the ring that we have seen Chris's dad, Ted. And, you know, they like I said, they had fun with it. He kept talking down the Blackhawks, which got a lot of heat as well. Every time I came here, we beat those Blackhawks. They're a bunch of whips. I used to beat up on this guy by the name of Bobby Hull. So I like that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't expect to see Chris's father time and time again, but for this one-off, it really worked. He got the Inner Circle custom-made Ranger jerseys.
They were so funny. First of all, like, one of them said, of course, Le Champion, and you had Ruffian and Thug for Pride and Powerful, and you had Sammy Guevara saying Spanish God, and the Big Hurt. Come on. And, you know, Sammy Guevara wearing his own shirt that says Spanish God on it with, in the background, the logo of the Inner Circle. Little stuff like that. It's the details. It's all the details. And the details with this thing, man, it was great. I had fun watching that segment.
I do hope if they run around the New York area in the new year that they do come out in these jerseys at some point or something.
So the beatdown of Justin Roberts, and who comes down the ramp dressed, and they were disguised in the marching band. Of course, SCU was disguised there, so the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky clearing the ring and standing strong at the end of that segment, looking kind of goofy, I have to say, in their way too big marching band uniforms, but it was what it was. It was kind of predictable, but the segment before that made the opening segment a winner for me.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the best things on the show. I mean, Jericho once again continues to spotlight how great he is with this new character where he's really just like a high school jock that doesn't know how dumb he is. And it's just working out, especially last week where he worked himself into defending his title against Scorpio Sky for tonight. I thought that was fun from last week. And just the whole interaction that we've been having with the whole Inner Circle as of late, especially the younger guys getting some time to shine, like Pride and Powerful and Sammy Guevara, has been really a fun development as this faction has really caught on strong.
Yeah, top heels in AEW by far. First match tonight, the Best Friends versus Lucha Brothers, and the Best Friends with Orange Cassidy dressed as a turkey for Thanksgiving, which is really fitting, but you know, I didn't think turkeys could fly, but you know, I was wrong, because apparently they can, especially when it's Orange Cassidy flying from the top rope to Lucha Brothers at the beginning of this match, which started with Lucha Bros attacking the Best Friends before the Best Friends even got to the ring from behind. Of course, that's how Lucha Bros do it usually, because they're bad guys. But I thought it was a great little opener. Best Friends have been starting to be heat up now. More credibility, that's two big wins in a row, and beating the Lucha Brothers in the way they did with, yeah, deserved win. And the Best Friends, that's an upset, I would say, beating Lucha Brothers. And now Best Friends are close to being considered for a tag team match, probably for the championship versus SCU in the near future. But it's been 2 weeks now that the Best Friends have been booked really strongly. So I do feel Best Friends are working towards maybe a title program in the next coming few months.
Well, Best Friends, as you said, this is two big wins in a row, this time in a tag over the Lucha Bros. And then Trent had a big win over Pentagon on AEW Dark last night, which really surprised me. But I guess it goes to show that AEW's they are booking everything that anything can happen, which can work. My only concern is I think the Lucha Bros are such a great act and arguably the best pure wrestling tag team that AEW has, that them going down in this feud back to back isn't for the better. But it could be it's just a nice little feud that we have being developed, as over the past couple weeks they're really setting up their mid-cards tag teams to get some feuds going. We saw Dark Order and potentially Jurassic Universe with Marco Stunt and Jungle Boy now as well, with Luchasaurus being back. They were being developed, so that could be something as well. But yeah, Best Friends are starting to be a team where they're moving up. I mean, there's a lot of things that can be worked with this team, especially having Orange Cassidy be a member in there as well. But you mentioned earlier on that Excalibur had some good references. Well, as Orange Cassidy was dressed up as a turkey and he jumped off the top rope to the floor on top of everyone, Jim Ross made it like that very old school WKRP in Cincinnati reference about flying turkeys, which is one of the most memorable episodes of not just in all of television about Thanksgiving. But then Excalibur made a reference about, you know, hitting the over 50 demo, which is where NXT has been killing AEW in the ratings. It's just the over 50 demo, where NXT especially won last week by a couple thousand viewers, but lost in every demo except the 50 and over demo. So I like the insider terms that Excalibur is throwing out there, where it does work. You just got to pay attention.
Yeah, And that was a great episode where, oh yeah, not frozen turkeys, don't kill people. Yeah, that was a great one, two great callbacks. Yeah, Thanksgiving. It's a good time. It's a good time. Happy Thanksgiving, by the way, if you're listening to this past midnight somewhere in the United States of America. Bea Priestley, Emi Sakura versus Hikaru Shida, and making her TV debut, Chris Statlander. One thing that I don't like to dwell on, but it happens often in AEW, back-to-back tag team matches. Like, it's not that hard to put something in between. You're going to tell me you couldn't put the Cody versus Matt Nix right there between to break it up a bit? Yeah, I think you could have, but that's just me be nitpicking. But back-to-back title matches, tag team matches with a similar finish too, I thought that was a bit too similar back-to-back.
But before we got to that tag match, they unveiled the AEW women's division rankings, which I'm like, are we going to get this thing for each and other, the singles, for the tags? Are we going to get these updates every once in a while here? Because I know that every Friday they do the updated rankings, and we saw where everyone was laid out with not Emi Sakurai, but Hikaru Shida was listed as at 3-1, being a number one contender for the AEW Women's Championship. So, okay, they've been talking about this for a long time, about booking on the records or the rankings, and there we finally get to see it on the Dynamite broadcast, what the rankings were. So I thought that was interesting as well.
Well, yeah, I forgot about that, but it's true, and I hope that we get I hope that we can go to the website, like AEW.com/rankings, and maybe find all the rankings. But it is also a slippery slope too, Jason, because if you were the booker, you don't want necessarily to book things too open, and you can't paint yourself in a corner with a ranking system, because you have number three, number two, number one, and there's only so much you can do. And if you look at a few, like, down the road tonight, Pac versus Omega, and the record, something had to give, and we'll see when we get there in a few minutes. But no, I agree with you, and it'll be interesting to see if we'll get tag team rankings, men and women, and if we'll get tag team rankings in the heavyweight division too, in the men. I think it would be worthwhile. John, of course, Emi Sakura won with the Magistral on Chris Statlander on her debut. Why beat her? I don't know. Of course, there were shenanigans, the cheap shot Sakura did, and then she was able to do the Magistral after on Chris Statlander. But I thought it was, why beat her? Like, of course, I know you don't want to beat Shida. She's the number one contender. I understand. And Chris Statlander, you couldn't, like, there was no good reason why Shida was with Chris Statlander for that match. It could have been somebody else. You could have, heck, put another woman there that could have taken the pin. You debut someone on TV and you make them lose. I just think it's not the best to have death in your women's division. If you only keep 3-4 women strong, it's all good, but you need people to take the fall. And I think it was a wrong decision to have Chris Statlander on her TV debut. She has a lot of potential, actually, and she loses on her first time. So the story of her, yes, having a lot of potential, lasted about 5 minutes. Even JR and Excalibur were like, oh, forget about a woman's potential. She is one of the person who has the most potential in this business, and she gets pinned in her TV debut. I didn't agree with this.
Well, I mean, this is the issue that AEW's women's division have, where they put together online, at least on Twitter, a solid start to potentially a program between Nyla Rose and Shanna, as they did a really good feature on AEW Dark about Shanna's journey and how she almost quit pro wrestling, and then AEW gave her the call a couple weeks ago, and she made that debut, and now she's lock, stocked, and barreled, you know, on a totally different trajectory and all in and signed with AEW. And I thought that was really fun. And then you set up a program with Nyla Rose and her. Okay, storytelling. All right. And then this, where we just throw a couple women together for the sake of a match to eat some time up. Like, okay, they're talented, they can put on good matches, but at this state in wrestling, with, you know, this head-to-head on the Wednesday Night Wars, whatever, good wrestling isn't just gonna cut it. There needs to be some reason and some logic behind it. Like, AW Dark has done a real good job of developing a lot of the talent on this women's division. Like, as we mentioned, the video package on Shanna, but Big Swole cut a really good promo talking about, you know, that she almost died. She had, I believe she had Crohn's disease. And I thought, okay, like, they're talented women and they're explaining stories. And here you have just Chris Statlander coming out. Like, we don't know anything about her. We know three of these four women, but we don't know about Statlander. She has to unfortunately eat the pin here. And that's just the issue right now with the AEW women's division. There isn't enough consistency where the B show that's uploaded to YouTube is doing a better job telling stories on the women.
I agree. And I think, like you mentioned, just a couple names you mentioned, you put Nyla Rose instead of Bea Priestley, and you put Sheena with Sheeta. And I think you have maybe a better storyline coming out of this match, and you can accomplish everything that this match accomplished, but actually have something out of it. What do you really have after out of it? Emi Sakura has a win. But she's not a contender. Like, she's not the number one contender. She's not even, like, that close. She actually didn't. She lose a few times to Riho, so she's already in the back of the line. So, yeah, I did not get that, but it's all right. We cannot agree on everything AEW does, and we have to be honest. And yeah, this is not the way I would have done it. We had a nice Jon Moxley vignette backstage, and the sentence that really caught my attention is the one who's like, because he's basically calling out anyone who's out there. It's like, anyone out there who wants to beat me up before I can beat you up, now's your time. It's your time to be a hero or get seriously hurt trying.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, and as well, that promo from Jon Moxley, another solid one. I like these filmed promos that they are doing. And they're just continuing to build Moxley up to be obviously the number two top talent in this company. Even though there's some talent that's really broken through, and one of them was in the main event tonight in Scorpio Sky, Darby Allin last week, but Moxley right now is just taking his career to another trajectory.
Now in the next segment, this is where I always need you for this show, Jason, for sure, but I'll need you to explain to me who these guys were in a couple minutes. Cody comes out, makes an entrance. He's all dressed. It's his return, his first match since Full Gear versus Matt Nix. All dressed in purple, man bun included. 2-minute squash match, finish with a figure four on Matt Nix, and it's all over. Promo now, and Cody starts to talk, and then you see some guy coming out of the ring, and followed by another guy, and they start attacking Cody, and then we hear Excalibur, it's the blade, and then the other guy's the butcher. And Allie comes out. She's a heel now? And she's a bunny? What did I miss?
Well, Allie was always known as a bunny, at least for Time and Impact as well, where she went on this really dark journey after her feud with Sue Young, who was an undead bride, whatever. But Allie's character development here makes sense after, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, where she was about to cut a promo with Tony Schiavone, and then Brandy and Awesome Kong came out and beat her down and then cut her hair. So maybe that explains it. But the two gentlemen that came out under the ring, the Blade and the Butcher, the Blade, who was the first that came out, was Braxton Sutter, who is much as well as the Butcher. They're both from Buffalo, New York. Worked a lot of time on the Canadian independent scenes for both Smash, C4 up in Ottawa, and as well for ESS in Buffalo, New York. And these are guys that have really put their time together. Now, Braxton Sutter as the Blade was in Impact for a little bit of over a year, a couple years ago. Didn't like how things were going. Is the real-life husband of Allie. But for me, I was just really stoked to see the Blade and the Butcher, Andy Williams as well. This is a really fun, unique, dynamic tag team. I don't know if this was the right time for them to debut. It felt totally out of nowhere with them. Not that they debuted, but that they beat down Cody when Cody clearly has unfinished business with MJF. That was the only thing that really threw me off because MJF obviously was in that match tonight against Adam Page. but this just came really out of nowhere. Is now Cody going to need his brother or a partner to get rid of these guys before to get to MJF? Like, and I don't understand the reasoning at all.
I agree. They could have debuted and beat down on anyone else, and it would have made more sense. But it is what it is. I do agree with you, though. The look of the Butcher with that monocle and that mustache, yeah, that's a killer look. He reminds me of, you know, when you're a kid and you look at people in their mid-30s, they look so old, right? And especially with a mustache or something. Like, oh, man. And I had that vibe looking at the Butcher. I'm like, yep. He looks like my uncle decided to become a pro wrestler, and I wouldn't F with him. Like, he looks like a mean guy that you see in the street of Buffalo, New York, actually. He really does look like that.
Well, they're going to be another solid addition to the AEW tag division. They can compete. They've worked with a couple of the teams here that are in AEW already. Like, I got to see them in a three-way dance with the Dark Order involved in it. But it's like the Canadian, or even though the Blade and the Butcher are from Buffalo, they get a lot of respect because a lot of their big work was done in the Canadian indies. Like, these, the Butcher and the Blade, and as well the Dark Order, they're kind of seeming like the same cult vibe right now.
I thought they were the same for a second. Yeah. I was like, is it Dark Order rebranded? Then I'm like, no, because later on we actually had something else about that, which I'm really excited to talk to you about. I actually have the website queued up to talk about it, to show it to people on the screen. And that was a nice vignette later on, too. But no, I had them. I was like, is this a rebrand of the Dark Order? No, it's something totally different. That's what I realized after.
So, I mean, this once again is, I guess, why we have to keep tuning in. I mean, I expect either the Butcher and the Blade to have a match next week on Dynamite and or on AEW Dark after their debut. But nonetheless, I'm happy they're there, but this just felt totally off, and maybe it's throwing a little wrench into the program with MJF, but nonetheless, this definitely took a lot of steam out of that program between Cody and MJF. We expected something to be continuing. This is Cody's return since the Full Gear pay-per-view, and all he gets to mutter out is MJF, and then gets jumped by Butcher and the Blade.
Yeah.
Really odd. Really odd segment.
Really odd. Pac comes out for his match versus Kenny Omega, and I want to take a close attention right here to the records, singles record especially. Pac has a 4-1-1 record coming out here, and Kenny Omega a 3-2 record. The one is the, of course, the one unsanctioned match, so that's why there's a one in there for Pac. Kenny Omega is 3-2. This all comes into play because, of course, Kenny Omega won at the end. I like the snap suplex that Kenny Omega does. No one really does it better than him right now. Reminds me, of course, of Chris Benoit. I don't like to mention his name for good reasons, but that snap suplex, that's what it looks like. You call a spade, and it looks pretty damn good to me. Omega won, technical finish here, reversal, and the pin, the roll-up reversal type of pin for Kenny Omega, who is now his 4-2 redemption and now has a decent record. But I think it's kind of a shame again that Pac has to be suffering. As example, you're talking about the rankings, Jason. If there's a rankings now, both guys are 4-2. So you do have the idea that why did you break a little bit of the momentum that Pac seemed to have with this loss for against Omega tonight?
Yeah, I mean, We knew that this was a match pretty much built to get Kenny Omega his win back. Kenny Omega is going to go back on the trajectory of, you know, building himself back up after that gruesome hardcore style match against Jon Moxley back out at Full Gear. But just on the AEW website right now and looking at the records overall, some of these are just beyond shocking to me right now. Did you know Jungle Boy is 0-7 in AEW?
No, but Jungle Boy is the 2019 version of Mikey Whipwreck in the ECW, no? So I can see that, 0-7.
Wouldn't that be more Marco Stunt? Like, Marco Stunt being 0-5, yes. Okay, I understand that. But Jungle Boy, it's like they seem like they want to do something with him, but the man is 0-7 in the company. Like, what is that?
Yeah, I did not expect that. And
Luchasaurus is 1-3.
was injured, but no, one in three. No, like,
I mean, he was injured. Yes, you are right. Pentagon is now what, 5-5?
Yeah, that's stupid. Like, yeah, that I agree. That's stupid.
The Lucha Bros as a tag team are 4-3, or now 4-4. I don't know if these are 100% updated in AEW. That's insanity.
The only reason why I imagine they're doing this is to keep. If you look at the sports world, right? Okay, example, you're going to have your champions and your contenders for now, but you want to keep it strong. You don't want to use all your best players in the beginning of the game, right? And if we're talking about the game is the long run, the long-term booking for AEW, you don't want to use all the big pieces that you have maybe down the road. So maybe down the road, you actually have Lucha Brothers taking the title away from SCU, but it might need a 6 to 8 months story arc that finishes with that. So you need to keep those guys for that period of time. So you have to put them on the back burner for now and unfortunately have losses. Maybe that's the same for a couple of contenders like Kenny Omega. I was just thinking, Kenny Omega might be the guy who eventually down the road represents the Elite and take the belt off of Jericho, because of course we know that Cody cannot. Well, at least he said he will not vie for the title. If he lost at Full Gear, he lost at Full Gear. So if you're looking at a single competitor coming at the Elite, it's either Omega or Hangman Page. And I kind of have a feeling Kenny Omega will be the big glory moment with the streamers and a celebratory moment in a year.
Well, it has to be. It right? has to be Omega, because now he's, what, 7-4 in the company? Based on just because if you're going on this is the issue booking on records, is he would literally have to be the only one, because after tonight, Hangman Page, who is in the main event of their first pay-per-view, is 5-6, is a 500 singles wrestler and a 500 tag wrestler coming into tonight. Now make him a 500 overall, 4-4 in terms of singles, and that one loss in the tag makes him 5-6 overall.
Wasn't like, Hangman Page also the first match for the title against Jericho, right? It was Hangman.
That's what
Page,
I'm
right?
saying. He was in the first main event of the first pay-per-view of AEW at All Out back in that building this past summer, August 31st, and the guy is a 500 wrestler. So, like, that's insane. Yeah. This is the issue they're running into, is where it's like, okay, we're building some guys up, but we got to cool them down a bit. Got to mishmash stuff, and that's where like the unpredictability is kind of nice, but in the long picture, it's hurting, I think, the long-term plans for AEW. And then when you hear that Nick Jackson says in the new year they're going to reset the records, that it doesn't work like that.
You can't do that.
You can't do that. You can't do that. That would, first of all, be a slap in the face to the fans. And in the UFC, they have rankings right now, which I still think is insane that they're booking fights in ways and making pay-per-views and title fights off that. But whatever, that's besides the point. They don't go, oh, well, it's a new year, let's restart your record. You can't do that.
Okay, so it's a new year, so you're now undefeated again. So you can
Everyone's undefeated. It's open season. The champions will have to wait like 6 months or if we already have title fights booked, okay, but it's a new year, so they'll have to please tell me they actually don't do that. For the sake of the legitimacy of AEW, that would be a smart thing to keep the records. Like, records got to be what they are. The numbers don't lie. And I think if you're going to book on, you're either going to book on records or you're not.
And the only way you can do it is by not mentioning the records for everyone, only mentioning it when you have a story arc that relates to it. It doesn't have to be true.
But they put the records out there for everyone in every graphic.
That might be the problem. You only have to use it when you truly, right, in the world of business and in sports, you want to highlight the strength and hide the weaknesses, right? So you don't want to necessarily show people that your guy is 0-72. It's not something, unless that's what he's known for. Maybe Jungle Boy will be that.
Oh, well, you're going to get to that point with someone like the Librarian and Peter Avalon. Yeah. And it's going to be like, but he won a match. He's going to be 1-72.
But he might get over, though, for that one match that he eventually wins. That might be a good...
Oh, for sure. That he's going to get over that way.
So, but if like, you do something with it like this, it's great. That's fine. What is not good is if you put everyone at 4-2, 3-2, 5-8, 3-2, whatever the case may be. Then it just becomes numbers, and then you don't get a storyline off of it. So,
and that's exactly what they're doing. When you look at their their top of their mid card to guys that could break out, like Ray Phoenix is now 6-5. Pentagon is now 5-6, and Pac is now 4-3-1. Like Sammy Gervais is 3-4. Like, this is not what you're wanting to do. Now it's just so much clutter at the top of that mid card breaking on through. The only people with solid records, is, as we mentioned before, is Omega, who's now 7-4 in the company. Moxley, who two of his matches have been unsanctioned as well, so he's 3-1-1. And Jericho, who's now 8-1 in the company as the champion, who the champion should have the best record as he is the champion. But there's so much middle of the road booking right now for no one to break through. There's no breakout performance because you're just booking right now, exactly as you said, on numbers. And that's the issue where we're at right now.
No, I agree. And the only way where they can maybe move away from it is you start to mention it when you want, and slowly you fade the data in the background, right? Don't have the rankings on the website. Don't have the records on the website. Mention it when it's worth mentioning it. They could be gimmicked records. Who cares? We didn't care about
Gold. I don't think they're going to do that because they're so content on this.
Just to a point, right?
You got to start booking some fresh faces to get hot. You got to book some losing streaks. You can't just book, well, Kip Sabian came out here and we just put him on TV. He got a win. Oh, he lost the next week. Why would I care about him? Like, Sean Spears is 4-3. He had a huge program with Cody in the summer, and he's literally the most forgotten about guy. Like, excellent on commentary last week, but a 500 wrestler in the company. Like, that can't happen.
I agree. I totally agree. And we'll see how they get themselves out of this pickle. And that's one of the things that we thought was going to happen when they mentioned we're going to use record. Win and losses are important. Win and losses are important. The numerical aspect with them, that's another thing. So we'll see how they handle it. The Dynamite Diamond Ring match final. MJF accompanied by Wardlow against Hangman Page. Like, MJF is 1-1. Hangman Page 4-3 in the singles here. We kind of knew that it's going to be MJF winning that thing, because otherwise, what's the point? What do you want Hangman Page to do with a diamond ring? It doesn't help anything, and it doesn't mean. So at least this, I think, makes kind of sense. MJF wins with the Crossroads, which is, again, another little shot to Cody. And who presents the diamond ring? None other than DDP himself. Yes, it's him. It's him. It's DDP comes out to give the diamond ring. And of course, we knew there was going to be an exchange of more than just words between them. When I like the fact that, you know, your actions recently, Maxwell, I don't agree with them. And then he's like, what you want tonight? You're still the man. I'm going to shake your hand. MJF takes his gum, put in the hand of a DDP. And then comes a big heated exchange, and Wardlow steps in between them. And I like that phrase by DDP looking at Wardlow like, yeah, you better back away, because you know what? You're going to look stupid when a 63-year-old man beats your ass all across the town in Chicago. Yeah, that was a good one by DDP. He seemed quite not happy. That was good.
Well, yeah, I mean, do we get some sort of involvement with DDP going forward? And
you look in shape.
Which I'm fine with. He's been a lot in the company, and he means a lot as well, because he's a big deal. We've seen him so close with Cody, because he is so close with that the family, Rhodes family. But I mean, as you said, this was really important for MJF. He was the one that had to win. He's the heel. Heels have to win these types of matches. He comes through, wins. I did think it was gross that he put that gum in DDP's hand, closed the
way
fist
he closed
like
it, and then
I was like, oh, that's a little gross, actually.
But it works. But then, like, it's perfect for that character. That character grosses me out. In real life, he's not the guy that I would go to become friends. He's the kind of guy that'd be like, oh man, can you believe that? But it works. It's the perfect casting. That guy might be the perfect casted role I've seen on television, never mind wrestling, in maybe two decades.
He's a great heel. There's no doubt about it. And now I'm wondering, are we on a sidetrack with like Adam Page and DDP going up against MJF and Wardlow? Like,
While Cody is battling the
Blade and the Butcher. Like,
I'm hungry. We're talking about Blade and butchering. Where's my steak?
That's
yeah, what I'm thinking. I don't know, but that feud definitely right now coming definitely not medium rare right now, or it's very rare so far. But I don't know, honestly, like, that just seems so weird. Like, are we gonna get back there? I just feel like a total miss tonight by AEW on a show they promoted very heavily with big matches, big stars on there, and for a feud that looked like it was really going to be a no-brainer, just MJF and Cody going totally different trajectories tonight. We'll see if they – I trust that they can bring it back, but tonight it just feels like, where are we going with this? Like, what are we doing?
It's almost like oh, yeah, the pay-per-view is a bit too far away. This got too hot too quick. Let's cool it down for a couple of weeks and let's go back to that heat. Maybe that's what they're thinking. Speaking of heat, Dustin Rhodes comes out and he's got his cast on and he calls out Jake Hager. He's like, oh, you heard me. And then, of course, you have the Inner Circle coming out to beat up Dustin's, which he clears a couple of them with the cast. And then to help him, a returning Matt Jackson. And then Nick Jackson eventually comes. And I like that spot. I always do. Eventually looks at everyone, makes the motion, puts them in three corners, and you hear JR, oh, I think we're going to get a couple of shattered dreams, a few ruined expectations. Yeah, I like that. Vintage gold dust here for Dustin Rhodes.
Well, I mean, this segment served a purpose as well, because we get a match out of this next week with Inner Circle members Sammy Guevara and Pride Powerful taking on the Young Bucks and Dustin Rhodes. Makes perfect sense. Pride and Powerful and Young Bucks still look like they have unfinished business thanks to Matt's injury. And Dustin Rhodes wants a piece of the Inner Circle, still wants Jake Hager. We don't really know when Hager's going to have a match. You still do figure that'll be at the pay-per-view, Hager versus Dustin Rhodes. All I'm guessing right now is Hager still wants another fight in Bellator before 2019 comes to a close, as his last fight ended in that no contest. So quickly. So you would think that he's looking to get another fight in with Bellator before 2019 comes to a close. Hence why we haven't seen him in the ring, but they have been using him excellently as a heater for this Inner Circle. So maybe the less wrestling for him has been for the best.
Yeah. And maybe the less fighting is for the best too. But no, it's not too bad. Maybe he's going to fight in that Ryzen co-promotion with Bellator and Japan in New Year's.
Could be. That's one card that's looking like it's probably the only option, or maybe early January with this big Bellator in card at the Forum, where Chris Cyborg will make her debut for the promotion, and their start of their featherweight Grand Prix semifinals will begin.
Okay, Jason, I'm going to make my mea culpa. I was quick to talk about them and dismiss them and saying, I need more. I need something else than just a weird guy with a weird trench coat, another guy with a weird mask. I need something a little bit better. I guess someone was listening, because we got that little something better. And it was the joindarkorder.com. You can see it on your screen now. A great video, a great little commercial. There's more online. Go check the website. Sign up. You'll receive fun emails. That's what I wanted. This has totally changed the direction of the Dark Order. This have given them way more cool points that they had before, turning him from just a weird two guys to now a cult, or even a self-motivational type of entry into a cult. And what do you sign for? Exactly. It's done. There's no turning back. That's what you receive when you sign up. So you sign up, you put your email, they ask you for your phone, for a lot of things. You don't have to answer everything, by the way. And then you receive a little note on your screen that says, it's done, no turning back. I kind of liked it. I thought it was hilarious.
I think it's been definitely something that's totally been needed for the Dark Order. It seemed like this is a good act that got started on the pay-per-views, where before Dynamite was launched, then once Dynamite got underway, they lost all their momentum, lost a lot of matches, and they were just becoming just a good hand act in the tag division. But they started to look like a good program going on with Jungle Boy, Marco Stunt, and Luchasaurus. And then they put that video last week and then continue the trend of it today on Dynamite. And I just thought, this is exactly that. They're coming across as like that David Koresh, like cult leaders. And we're following the story of a man that has taken up and been interested in and joining what the and seeing what the Dark Order can do for him, because, you know, he's really overweight. He was bullied at the subway.
He's a loser.
And now he's
right?
starting to he's a loser, but he's starting to realize, if I join this, I'm going to get myself confidence. I'm going to be a better person. I'm going to be someone that can potentially be president one day. And I just think this has been excellent. We almost saw what Evil Uno's face looked like. And then you do the quick little juxtaposition where he's got the mask on and he's got his new set of minions. Like, this has been good character development. The production values and promo segments that AEW have done each and every week have been 10 out of 10. They started the show with that Jericho Celebration 10 out of 10 segment, and this is a solid character development. Like, now we have to see, is he going to choose the Dark Order? Like, I'm more intrigued about that than a lot of things right now.
And I hope he does. And I hope that that's how they create minions. That's what we wanted to know. Why are those guys there? We didn't. Now we do. I hope that guy becomes one of the minions, and they're like, okay, that's how they create minions. I love that aspect. And finally, I think for me at least, I guess the Dark Order actually turned a corner for me. Main event time, and I like what they did too. There was about less than 20 minutes left until the 10 p.m. mark. And like, oh, JR made a mistake. Like, oh, for TV time remaining, Excalibur is like, no, every AEW title match is an hour. If this goes after the top of the hour, it will be live on YouTube. It will be live on our website. You'll be able to watch it tonight if it goes past 10 p.m. But they will get an hour. It's on TV. It's an hour time limit match. Of course, we all knew that it was going to be finished before the end of the show. But I like that they just keep it for credibility, for the suspension of disbelief. I kind of like the fact that Excalibur on top of things.
Yeah, I thought this was a fun main event for AEW. I mean, even though Scorpio Sky, you know, loses here, had been in such a hot streak, and that comes to an end here thanks to losing to Le Champion Chris Jericho, I thought the way they did it was solid, where Scorpio Sky, you know, he hit his finish on Jericho, and Jericho kicked out at like 2 3/4. Jericho made Scorpio Sky look solid. And just a good competitive back and forth match on AEW Dynamite, where the last one where Jericho defended the title against Darby Allin, you needed some sort of run-in shenanigans to have Jericho defend. Here he did beat Scorpio Sky clean, but he was able to find a unique way to get into the walls of Jericho, and then unfortunately Scorpio Sky tapped. I don't think Scorpio Sky loses any bit of momentum. We'll focus now probably in the tag division, but he's still looked solid, can hang with the big guys, has one of the best records right now in AEW as well. Will be 9-4 now in the company after this loss to Jericho. But this was, you know, you wanted to put a big match on Thanksgiving, as the tradition has been in wrestling. This was that. And then we lead to obviously the next program for the next pay-per-view, as Jon Moxley came out right after this match.
Yeah, I guess his music is very powerful, because his music itself made Chris Jericho drop the Lion Tamer and save Scorpio Sky, with Jon Moxley just going down halfway down the stairs at the Sears Center. Thought it was a good match. I agree with you. This is a great match. I like how they're hiding Chris Jericho as much as possible as they can during the matches. They're finding ways to protect also the contender here. Scorpio Sky actually was able to get away from the Judas effect and was able to protect him that way. He was able to not get pinned, at least, but he's getting submitted with a Lion Tamer. I like the fact that they're going back to the Lion Tamer. I think it is one of the seeds. I think they're planting seeds, Jason. I think before Chris Jericho retires from AEW, we're going to get a callback. We're going to get a babyface run with Lionheart Chris Jericho before the end of 2020. That's my prediction for next year.
I think we at some point have to get babyface Jericho, where I guess the Inner Circle would turn on their leader, as has happened so many times in the realms of pro wrestling. I would expect it. Now is definitely not the time
to be doing this. For sure.
But potentially by the summer or spring of next year, we could be in a different place with Chris Jericho as a character. I know he's got a big match in New Japan at the Tokyo Dome against Hiroshi Tanahashi. I mean, a lot can change as well. Is New Japan going to be involved? I know the Jacksons have said that he won't be, they won't be, but I definitely think he's going to be involved. They're going to be involved in some aspect, but for now and for the foreseeable future, it'll be Chris Jericho and Jon Moxley. I thought Jericho sold when Moxley came out the perfect way, as he was able to, read the lips when he said, "This has nothing to do with you." Because he doesn't want any of that smoke for the deranged style that Moxley brings to the table. And now he's going to have to face it.
Yep, he's going to have to face it. And we'll know more down the road about the future Moxley versus Chris Jericho feud. But next week, Champagne. We're going to Champagne. And so far, what has been announced, it's a six-man tag team. Dustin Rhodes with the Young Bucks versus Pride and Powerful and Sammy Guevara will main event next week's AEW Dynamite. This was a fun episode, and I'm glad we're back, Jason.
Yeah, it was real nice to be back, and now hopefully we can get back in the full swing of things as AEW's got a couple more shows before the end of 2019, and just the lineup of the schedule coming up for AEW in the new year will be really, really exciting. As you said, next week they're in Champaign, Illinois, a couple swings in Texas, but New Year's Day, it gets all restarted. Homecoming show, you know that's going to be a big deal as it is New Year's Day in Jacksonville. And they're doing on January 15th a Bash at the Beach show in Miami, Florida, on the campus of the University of Miami. And as well, a pretty cool show that they are taping on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager tour. That'll be, I think, real fun. So three unique shows in January to help set AEW apart from the competition.
That cruise show is going to be fascinating. How do you get good TV angles on a cruise ship? We'll see. And that's a couple of good shows that will come in the next few weeks. You can follow Jason on social media at jhackhome1, myself at Kev Larame, and this show at All Elite Review, live now every Wednesday after AEW Dynamite. You can watch us on social media, podcast version available everywhere you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, make sure to go to our Patreon page. Bonus coverage coming for wrestling fans and mixed martial art fans in the near future. Go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. For Jason, I'm Kevin, and until next time on the All Elite Review Show, have a great wrestling.